Millions of people around the world this week have watched developments unfold in the case of WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange. The UK's High Court heard arguments on February 20th and 21st as to whether Assange should be granted permission to appeal his extradition to the United States to face 17 felony counts of espionage and one count of conspiracy to commit computer intrusion. All the charges related to the Iraq and Afghan war logs, the Guantanamo Bay detainee files, and U.S. diplomatic cables released to WikiLeaks by U.S. Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning. This includes the infamous collateral murder video, which showed U.S. helicopters gunning down 12 civilians, including two Reuters journalists. Assange faces 175 years in prison in the United States. The High Court did not make an immediate decision on the request to grant Assange the right to appeal the decision to extradite him. A decision is not expected until after March 4th. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. I have made no secret over the years that I believe Julian Assange is a bona fide hero. Without Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, we would have no idea what crimes the U.S. government and the U.S. military have committed in the name of the American people. We wouldn't know that the military deliberately lied about military prospects in Afghanistan during the war there. We wouldn't know about the cold-blooded murder of 12 civilians, including two Reuters journalists in Iraq. We wouldn't know that the CIA had the technical ability to take over control of a moving car by hacking into its computer system. We wouldn't know that the CIA could hack into a smart TV and turn its speaker into a microphone to spy on what's being said in a room, even when the TV is turned off. We have Julian Assange to thank for all of this. The past 14 years have not been easy for Assange. He was initially arrested on trumped-up allegations of sexual assault and spent 10 days in solitary confinement in London's Wandsworth prison. That was followed by 550 days of house arrest. That, in turn, was followed by 4.5 years of asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Although asylum is in the eye of the beholder, the Ecuadorian authorities worked closely with the CIA and with the UK's MI5 and MI6 to wire literally the entire embassy for video and audio, including in Julian's bathroom, where he sometimes met with his attorneys, thinking that it was safe to speak there. He was forcibly dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy almost 5 years ago, after the Ecuadorian government turned on him and threw its lot in with the CIA. And he's been in London's maximum security Belmarsh prison since April 11th, 2019. He's been in solitary confinement for much of that time. Assange did not attend this most recent hearing. He was too sick to do so. His wife said that he had been coughing so severely that he actually broke a rib. But maybe that's the American government's plan. Just keep him in prison until he dies. Then the problem just goes away. We're going to discuss this important issue with independent investigative journalist Mohamed Elmazi. Mohamed is based in London, where he's been reporting on the Assange hearing for The Dissenter. Mohamed, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, there is so much to discuss in this fast-moving story. Let's start with what was said in the courtroom over the course of the 2 days. The U.S. Justice Department's attorney, Claire Dobbin, asked the judges to reject Julian's request to appeal the order to extradite him. Dobbin said that Julian acted far beyond what any journalist would have done. So what exactly does that mean? And did the judges react to it in any way?
So we couldn't see the reaction of the judges, although they did ask a number of probing questions, which at least I and another other observers, other journalists, people like Craig Murray and Joe Loria, did find it hopeful that they did seem to be following not just what the prosecution was making saying, but what the defense was as well. But in terms of Claire Dobbin and the U.S. government's arguments that both Julian Assange not being an ordinary journalist, but also WikiLeaks, they said as well. And they said this goes well before Chelsea Manning, which is something I don't recall them arguing before. They said at the very beginning, they use language like Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have been inciting people to steal classified documents, right? In violation, to commit crimes and to steal. So that's, they didn't refer even to Chelsea Manning or others as whistleblowers or leakers, right? Obviously, they wouldn't use the term whistleblower, but even the term leak, they didn't say. They said steal. They used terms like incite, which normally you hear in terms of incitement to violence, right? Not incitement to leaking. And they really hammered home these allegations about, Julian Assange released the complete unredacted cables. And that's why this is very important. This is fundamental to our case, they said, even though only 3 out of the 17 or 18 charges even relates to documents that were unredacted. So then, and that was a point raised by the defense lawyers. It's like, well, if that's the case, why do all these other charges then exist? And as we've discussed the last time I was on your show, there is no need to prove harm under the Espionage Act or damage of any kind.
That's exactly
not to
right.
mention the fact. Yeah. And so he wouldn't even be able to raise the defense that actually the allegations put forward by the U.S. government about potential harm are unproven, whereas the evidence of torture, of rape, of assassinations, of drone strikes killing civilians, and these are things that they actually said in court during the 2 days, those are proven. And there have been court cases that have considered used as evidence, conclusive proof of torture and drone strikes being used in courts, including the European Court of Human Rights in the case of Khaled al-Masri, which I know you're aware of, the man who was randomly picked up, mistaken for somebody else, tortured for months, and then dumped on the streets of, I want to say Macedonia, but I can't recall. It wasn't the country he was picked up in.
That's right.
And he won a case at the European Court as a result, in no small part, because of the leaks. So they did, I mean, it may be useful for people to know briefly the kinds of things that the defense were arguing. So the first day was mostly focusing, or 100% focusing on the defense arguments. The second day was mostly the U.S. government's response as to why Julian Assange should not be granted permission to appeal. So even though it feels like an appeal hearing, because they're making their appeal grounds, it's actually, you're presenting a sort of a compressed version of what you would be saying at an appeal for the judges to then go off and consider whether they'll even give you permission to appeal. And if they do, they should issue a further date where they'll say, okay, we'll go into this in more depth. And the kinds of arguments they've made are the US and UK extradition treaty. It clearly prohibits extradition for political offenses, and that the offenses that he's charged with, namely espionage, fall into the category of political offenses. That it's an abusive process for the US to seek extradition of Assange under the treaty for political offenses, since they know it's barred. That extraditing him would result in detention, which is arbitrary, i.e. outside of the law. That his extradition would represent a flagrant denial of his right to freedom of speech and freedom of press under Article 10 of the European Convention of Human Rights, including given the possibility that he'll be denied protections under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, because both the lead prosecutor, Gordon Cromberg, and former CIA director, when he was CIA director, Mike Pompeo, both said that Julian Assange, being a non-US person, would not be entitled to assert First Amendment protections were he to be tried in the US, even though they are asserting domestic criminal law to prosecute a non-US person who is based outside of the US when he published the documents, and when his source was also based outside of the US in Iraq. So it's interesting. That's right. They get to apply domestic U.S. law, but he doesn't get U.S. constitutional protections. And then there was also matters about the fact that he could be subjected to the death penalty, and the U.S. government has refused to issue assurances that they won't add charges that could lead to a death penalty charge. There are also some other things they also raised as well. But that's the broad scopes of what was argued over the 2 days.
Julian's attorneys brought up the CIA plot to kidnap or to kill Julian. This was a plot that was exposed by Yahoo News a few years ago. Dobbin dismissed the relevance of the article, arguing that it's not evidence. What was the reaction to that statement? Because to the best of my recollection, that article quoted 36 current and former American intelligence officers.
That's correct. And in fact, the defense raised the point that the Yahoo News article was preceded by two witness statements from members of UC Global, the security firm which was hired to protect the Ecuadorian embassy, which then got recruited by the CIA to then spy on everyone in the Ecuadorian embassy, especially Julian Assange, where they stated in their statements that the lawyers were priority targets. I remember that. And that was evidence presented during the main extradition hearings where Judge Baratzer basically dismissed those arguments. And one of the points that the defense made in opposition to Dobbin's arguments that this is not evidence, as you said, it's you have both many current and former members of the intelligence services. You have these other whistleblowers who came before. You have this court case going on in Spain as well. And, you know, this basically corroborates, this is evidence that corroborates each other.
Yes.
Not to mention the fact that the U.S. government in its case, original case, you know, 2 years ago, and this was quoted again here during these trials, pushed and repeatedly quoted from a letter that was signed by the New York Times, The Guardian, and others, where they denounced WikiLeaks after Julian Assange ended up publishing the unredacted versions of certain documents. Bear in mind that they were not the first to publish them. They had already been published, and they had already been published by a website which expert testimony previously explained was with a website, Cryptome, that had a far greater reach in those days on Google than WikiLeaks back in those days, and was as a result of the publishing of the password to the encrypted file which contained the unredacted documents, thereby making it available for everybody. And that was done by two Guardian journalists.
That's exactly right.
Set that aside for the moment, they use that as evidence to say that he's not a real journalist. Look, here are these famous establishment news outlets. They've come out and say, oh, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have crossed the line. Like I say, not mentioning any of the other factors at play. But so that's okay as evidence, but it's not okay to have evidence that is far more detailed, an article that is far more detailed and is corroborated, like I said, by whistleblower testimony. To be presented as evidence. I think they said that that's ludicrous on its face, actually.
We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss the public response to this hearing for Julian Assange, as well as what Julian can expect in the coming weeks and months. Stay tuned.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the Earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy.
Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are we living on now?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with independent journalist Mohammed Almazi about the hearing in London related to the extradition to the United States of WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange. Mohammed, good to have you with us. Thanks for hanging on. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Mohammed, the UN Special Rapporteur for Torture, Alice Edwards, again called for Julian to be released, as did Reporters Without Borders, Amnesty International, and a wide variety of other groups. This is great in terms of public opinion. But does it carry any weight inside the courtroom? Is it even presented inside the courtroom?
Well, if it has been presented, it will have been perhaps in written submissions, or it may be presented if they get a chance to appeal. But I didn't hear it mentioned in any of the oral arguments. And it may have something to do with the incredibly limited time they had. It may not seem like it, that you have a one full day and a bit of the second day towards the end. Mm-hmm. But actually, given the amount of ground they have to cover, given the fact that they know that the pressure is on the other side and they're trying to convince a judge to basically find that a lower court judge has erred in law. I don't even know if they would have been able to find a way to kind of shoehorn that in. But it does help, I think, in making it easier to if you like, make the right decision. Because we even saw recently that Australia passed a resolution, the Australian yes. Parliament and the Prime Minister, calling for the extradition to be halted. And thus, finally, the Prime Minister has come out publicly strongly. And that's as a result of growing pressure. I remember when it was just one or two MPs, I met them. Andrew Wilkie was one of them who had come here. And in fact, he was here 2 days ago. He'd come over from Australia. So there is a growing amount of pressure. I think it helps wherever there's flexibility. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're of the mind that this is indeed a politically motivated prosecution mm-hmm. and it is political forces which are driving it, then it makes sense that political forces can result in the prosecution being either dropped or in judges being pushed, if you like, feeling they at least have the cover to be pushed in the right direction. If they can interpret something one way or another, it could be just enough to kind of push them along onto the right side. So it is one of those situations where you need legal arguments, you need political arguments, you need public pressure, you need campaigns. It's not an accident that in cases such as these, the more campaigning and public pressure there is, the more likely cases will find themselves decided in a way that people didn't originally expect. We That's saw right. that with people who the Americans sought in previous extradition cases.
Exactly right.
People who were accused of hacking computers, but they were autistic. Mm-hmm. They're on the autism spectrum. In the end, they won their cases. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were grueling cases, but in the end, they won their cases where the Home Secretary ended up intervening. Okay, the CIA didn't want them as badly as they want Julian Assange, but right. the point is that it was political pressure that helped to push the needle.
Tell us a little bit about Julian's health. He didn't attend either day of the hearing, and we learned from his wife, Stella, that he has been sick and has been coughing so hard that he actually broke a rib. I hope this isn't a permanent situation. After all, everybody knows that tuberculosis runs rampant through prisons. How is Julian's health?
I mean, it's as you've described, and I think people also need to remember the context, right? That he's been incarcerated now for years. Before that, his health wasn't exactly great when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy either.
That's right.
I mean, people have this image as though it was some kind of mansion with a giant garden where you could, as though you're on holiday, but he wasn't. He wasn't exactly able to do whatever it is he wanted. I don't know if you ever visited him there. Oh, he also had a mini stroke. If people, yes. Some people may have forgotten about that during previous hearings. As we know, people who spend long periods of time incarcerated, especially much of that time is in solitary confinement or solitary-like conditions, combined with the anxiety and the stress of not knowing what is going to happen. Many people's, you know, lives shorten in terms of their life expectancy. Many mm-hmm. people who leave prison, many of them die within a few years for those who've spent many years in solitary.
That's absolutely true. I've heard a variety of rumors this week about what the potential outcome could be from this hearing. Julian could be extradited on March 4th. There could be a second hearing, a follow-up hearing. Any extradition could be delayed indefinitely. An extradition could be dragged out until just after the U.S. presidential election on November the 5th. An extradition could be delayed until the European Court of Human Rights makes its own decision. I understand certainly that nobody knows what's going to happen. But do any of these alternatives make any logical sense to you? Or do you think Julian will indeed be sent to the U.S. to face the trial of his life?
Well, Britain is still a member of the Council of Europe, an organization which it founded, right? And the European Court of Human Rights is the highest court, is the court of appeal that one would appeal to. So if he ultimately exhausts all his appeals here in the UK, let's say, for example, the court don't give permission to appeal, then the next stage is then to apply on an urgent basis, on an emergency basis, for what's called interim measures, to get an order from the European courts for them to say, you cannot extradite him until we consider his appeal. Mm-hmm. And at which point, I think he has very strong grounds at the European courts, not least of which because the European court is more independent than domestic courts are. Yes, there are British judges there, but there are also Spanish and French and German judges. Various bodies, various parts of the Council of Europe have come out against Julian's extradition. So if there mm-hmm. is political pressure, that helps to give them cover to decide the case as they should mm-hmm. and not as a result of state pressure, as it were. So he does have very good grounds, which frankly should have won here and hopefully yes. might still win here in the UK position. But if he doesn't, I mean, could he be bundled up by the UK government before an interim order, interim measure is applied or even after it is? Sure. But I think that would be, especially given the level of focus, I think that'd be very dangerous politically. I mean, anything's possible, especially in a case like this. But it would be largely unlawful, if you like. It's unlikely to have a decision. We're unlikely to have a decision by 4th of March because they've requested certain documents be presented to them. The High Court did. They asked for certain documentation from the lawyers. And one of the documents they said by the 4th of March, which it seems unlikely that they're going to be able to make a decision on whether to grant permission to him to appeal, mm-hmm. to hear, you know, have a proper appeal if they're only getting certain documents on the 4th of March. So right. Some people have suggested that given the election, right, that maybe,
exactly.
because let's see, they come out, let's say it takes a month for them to decide and they say, fine, we'll give you permission to appeal and we'll give it on 1, 2, 3 of these arguments. And then they'll set it for a certain date and then that one will come and then they'll have to make a decision on that. By the time all of that happens, we could well be, election time period, whether right. deliberately or otherwise.
Right. I could see then the U.S. government eventually walking away from this whole case. I hope that's not wishful thinking, but anyway. Yeah. Mohammed, looking at the bigger picture, what does a prosecution of Julian Assange mean for journalism in the United States?
Well, I mean, they're saying that the mere possession of what they call national defense information mm-hmm. Is a criminal offense. There's no public interest defense. Your motivations don't matter. The contents of the documents don't matter. It doesn't matter if it exposes war crimes or anything else, which means that typically you're not permitted to discuss these things. So if they are able to successfully prosecute somebody, or even if he's found not guilty, which we've already discussed, you and I, previously, how unlikely that is, given the fact that he'll have a national security jury in the Eastern mm-hmm. District of Virginia and Correct. Given the nature of the law. This would set a precedent that people who even U.S. courts have recognized works as a journalist and WikiLeaks, mm-hmm. whatever the government is saying in this case, courts in the U.S. have recognized WikiLeaks as being a news organization. Even the Mueller report did. Right.
Right.
This could open the door to prosecuting other journalists and other other publishers and other people engaged in journalistic activity. Because remember, the First Amendment doesn't protect people who are recognized by the state as journalists.
That's right.
It protects the activity. So even if you're a doctor, if you engage in activity that is deemed to be journalism, is the activity that is protected. Right, not a class of people or a profession.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget that the Ellsberg case, I think, might have been the first time that the Espionage Act was used to target whistleblowers. If I recall correctly, I could
yes,
be
indeed.
Wrong.
No, you're exactly right about that. That's exactly what it was.
So they. So previously, you use it, you have a precedent-setting case, and then it gets used again and again and again. And we saw how many times it was used. During the Bush and Obama administration, you should know because you're one of those people who found
Indeed.
Themselves prosecuted under the Espionage Act.
Indeed. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us and for enlightening us on this important and quickly changing case. The case of Julian Assange isn't just about Julian Assange, of course. It's about press freedom and freedom of speech. It's about holding governments accountable for war crimes and for crimes against humanity. It's about overclassification, transparency, secrecy. A prosecution of Julian Assange is a prosecution of the entire media. It's a blow against freedom. So it's up to all of us to support him. It's up to all of us to warn our governments that they derive their authority from the people. And the people have a right to know what governments are doing in their name. Thank you to Mohammed Almazi for joining us, and thanks to our viewers for being with us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.